From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today, we have the latest installment of American Rehab. We're dedicating 6 weeks of Reveal to tell you the story of how Americans seeking treatment for addiction have gotten pulled into a form of rehab that puts them to work without any pay. In our last episode, Luke Austin, the founder of the drug rehab CenterCor, was ousted at the end of the summer of 1978. He had siphoned off most of the organization's money to support a life of luxury for himself. CenterCor still had two facilities, its original headquarters in Colorado and its newer operation in Houston, Texas. But the organization was broke, and the 75 or so people living in Houston were struggling. Some had been there for years. Some were new, just starting to find a way out of addiction. And now all of them were resorting to a diet of cornmeal mush and green Jell-O just to survive. But as Laura Starcheski tells us, things are about to get a lot more corporate at CenterCor, with a little help from friends in high places. This is Chapter 5 of American Rehab, Reagan with the Snap.
With Luke Austin out, Ken Barron was helping run the Houston facility. He'd been at CenterCor for 6 years, and now he was trying to come up with a way to save the organization.
We didn't have a business plan. I mean, I'm telling you, I didn't know what I was doing.
After Luke Austin was caught spending CenterCor's money on himself, after the brawl where he tried retaking control of the organization with tear gas and baseball bats, CenterCor gained a reputation. Not a good one. Donors were balking at giving money, prominent board members left, and Ken took it upon himself to give the program some legitimacy, something that had been tough in the best of times.
We had critics all the time, you know, and I go, look, it's working for me. It's working for other people. You know, you can criticize all you want, but none of the other programs are doing much better either.
Those other programs were few and far between. In Texas in the late 70s, even with all the Synanon-inspired rehabs, there still just weren't that many options for people seeking drug treatment. And to make Ken's job even tougher, for all the years he'd been at CenterCor, he'd never really had control of the money.
I never carried money in CenterCor, ever. I don't think I had $10 in my pocket at any one time in, you know, 8 or 9 years. Nothing. Nothing.
But what Ken did have was a fundraising pitch. From the beginning, CenterCor participants were expected to pound the pavement and scrounge up donations. So he stuck to it, explaining the program to anyone who could help.
We got a therapeutic community, a program where people lived. We supported ourselves. We got donated food, donated clothing, donated cars. None of us got a salary, and that everybody has a job.
Those jobs had been fairly small time in the Luke Austin years. Landscaping gigs, the trucking business with one truck, the single CenterCor gas station. Now it was time to think bigger. CenterCor started getting more contracts with outside businesses, sending groups of workers out to do construction, to work at a door factory. They sent 20 people at a time to a company that manufactured giant roof trusses for building homes. Ken also arranged a contract with the Houston Astrodome. Crews of CenterCor participants worked as landscapers. They would swarm the field and work around the clock when it needed to be turned over from baseball to football. And in 1980, Ken set up one more big contract.
Houston has the Oilers, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, always in control. And when you say the Oilers, you're talking Super Bowl, 'cause we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers.
Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one.
You just can't help singing along with that Oilers song. Anyway, the Houston Oilers quarterback was Dan Pastorini. He'd been the team's first pick in the 1971 draft. A total star.
Dan Pastorini bullseyed 26 times for 354 yards on the afternoon and almost finessed Houston back to victory.
Picture a strong jaw and a dirty blonde surfer shag, and that's Pastorini. He dated Farrah Fawcett. He posed for Playgirl. Pastorini had what one newspaper called a freakishly strong arm. But he got hurt a lot.
And Pastorini is down. We watched Pastorini being carried out of this stadium earlier in the year on a stretcher. Dan is up now, but he really gets leveled.
After one of these injuries in 1978, three broken ribs, Pastorini was in Houston Methodist Hospital lying there in bed when two men walked in who he'd never seen before. Pastorini recounted this in an interview later with ABC News in Houston. One of these mysterious men was wearing a trench coat.
He came by the room carrying a brown paper sack and a friend of his with a baseball bat, and I thought they were going to pummel me to death and take me out of there.
But the man in the trench coat was an inventor named Byron Donzus. Out of the paper sack came Byron's latest invention.
So he just kind of nonchalantly takes his thing out and holds it over his ribs, and his buddy whacks him about three times. And I said, I'd like to have one of those.
Byron called his invention a flak jacket. It was designed just for football players.
2 days later, he shows up at practice, and he's got the prototype, which was made from a Navy SEAL life vest. And that worked. I mean, it was hot, but it was very protective.
In Pastorini's next game, he faced off against 300-pound defensive linemen. Under his uniform, the flak jacket hugged his cracked ribs tight. NFL Films called that game one of the 10 gutsiest performances in football. And the customized pads players wear today are still based on that original flak jacket.
Takes the ribs, their sternum, and they still have full motion. Now, quarterback would just as soon go without his jock as he would his flak jacket.
Pastorini and Byron Donzus earned a footnote in NFL history. But there's one big detail left out of that footnote. Senecor. When Byron Donzus was starting out, he had a prototype and a patent, but that's all. Byron was more of an inventor than a businessman. That's where Senecor comes in. Ken Barron made a pitch that Senecor had what he didn't. Workers.
Why don't we start making that stuff here? We can make it for you. Because it was all custom made. And he was making it like in his basement.
When Ken set up the contract with Byron, he cleared the entire 10th floor of Senecor's Houston hotel and created a makeshift flak jacket factory.
Look, I didn't go for any codes. I didn't go to the city. I didn't ask for permission. We just set up this kind of manufacturing system. You know, we've got ovens, we're melting plastic, we're doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
The folks you see assembling the Donzus gear are participating in a Houston drug rehabilitation program called the Senecor Foundation, a group of people Byron is proud to be associated with.
We found this old news footage, which looks and sounds like it was recorded on a jumpy VCR tape. It's from a TV show called PM Magazine, broadcast in Beaumont, Texas in 1981. You can see the Senecor workers standing at workbenches, peering through big 1980s glasses, cutting plastic into shapes using cardboard templates labeled large rib and sternum plate. Byron explained the program.
Some 40 of them work with us in manufacturing by hand, sewing, molding, forming, cutting, everything by hand, and watching over it to make sure the quality is there.
Senecor started by supplying the Houston Oilers. From there, they ended up making flak jackets and other pads for all 28 teams in the NFL and 800 college teams.
Making football equipment was perfect. We manufactured the stuff, we received it, we shipped it out of there, so people learned shipping, receiving, and then guys would do sales. But it was a hoot of a job to do sales, and I did a lot of sales. I went to Hawaii twice to sell to the University of Hawaii.
Sometimes these lucky Senecor salespeople even got sideline passes to games. These brothers and sisters of Senecor had gone from living in a rundown hotel wearing donated jeans and eating cornmeal mush to wearing donated suits and jet-setting around the country. By 1983, Senecor was making millions of dollars a year. It was pulling in big donations from corporations like Shell and Boeing. Ken had taken over as president, and the leadership started getting salaries for the first time. Centocor was still not paying any wages to its participants, the workers, by the way. This was the moment when someone else got interested in what was going on at Centocor. Someone who would send its star rising even higher. One day, Ken's phone rang, and the voice on the other end said he was calling from the White House.
So I said, no, you're not calling from the White House. He said, yeah. He said, I'll give you my number, you can call me back. So 202-456-1414, I got White House. Can I speak to Mike Castine?
Mike Castine worked for President Ronald Reagan. He was the deputy director of something called the Office of Private Sector Initiatives.
Hold on, put him right through. Oh, jeez, what are you calling about? And so he explains to me, we're looking for a place for the president to visit. Could we come by and visit? I said, sure, come by and visit. I said, crazy, but come by.
Reagan was looking for places to speak, to show America what his federal drug policy was all about, which is how, in 1983, Reagan came to visit Centocor's old hotel in downtown Houston. In the photos from that day, you can see a banner that reads Centocor Enterprises and a young woman wearing a Centocor T-shirt in front of a sewing machine and a stack of flak jackets. Ken Barron got to introduce the president.
I appreciate him being here because we've worked so very, very hard for 15 years to get the recognition that we feel Centocor deserves, and this man has recognized that. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the press and distinguished guests, President of the United States.
Thank you all very much for a very heartwarming welcome. I'm very proud and happy to be here. And you know, I've seen some of the products and the things that you're doing here, and I might just buy some of that football equipment that I saw and use it with the Congress. So long as you don't sell them any.
Ken even helped the president test the flak jacket himself, reenacting that product demo from Dan Pastorini's hospital room.
We had to put a rib protector on one of the guys, and I was holding the baseball bat. I mean, the Secret Service was nervous about that. But then I handed it to the president. I showed the president how to hit the guy in the ribs with a baseball bat, and then he took a swipe at the guy.
But this spectacle wasn't really about the football equipment. It was about pushing Reagan's economic policy, known as Reaganomics. He was slashing taxes and social services, shrinking the government. Centocor was the perfect example to show that the federal government didn't need to be involved in treating drug addiction at all.
This center is self-sufficient, just like all of you will soon be. Centocor receives no federal money, and so no federal strings come attached.
Well, it wasn't quite self-sufficient. Centocor actually had received government money. The Colorado facility had gotten almost $300,000 from the federal government. One early resident told me they'd eaten government cheese in Houston for years. Never mind all that. Centocor's approach spoke to Reagan.
I was glancing through your Centocor booklet, and I liked the very first sentence I read. In all the years that Centocor has been in business, rehabilitating lives, we have found that nothing works as well as work itself. And work is therapy. You feel better about yourself when you have something productive to do.
It also didn't seem to matter that Centocor's years-long work therapy program didn't work for most people. Beyond a core group of devotees like Ken, most people still left Centocor just a few months after they arrived. Those people who left, who didn't make it through the program, I couldn't find anyone like that still around to talk. But the believers believed. All the people I could find who were at Centocor in the early days, they loved it. Despite Luke Austin's abuse, despite the other failings, they stayed. And some even told me that Centocor saved their lives. Ken Barron still swears by what he learned there. and he knows the stakes are life and death. About 10 years ago, his daughter died of an opioid overdose. Knowing those are the stakes, life and death, when people come to Ken for help, he still tells them about Centocor. He even sent his own son there.
We've got somebody there who's doing very well. We've had people that haven't done very well.
I had told Ken the reason we're reporting on Centocor now is because its participants work, but it doesn't pay them. Ken says he knows the program doesn't help everyone, but that failing is not because of the unpaid work.
Nothing has to do with the jobs that I've heard. The only criticism comes from that is journalists. I'm not knocking you at all, Laura, or people that have left the program. Oh, they made me work so hard. Well, what else would you be doing? What else would you be doing with your life if you're not working every day, learning a trade, or helping other people live? I mean, it's what would you rather be doing? Sitting in the therapy session all day long and talking to your neighbor or what? I mean, I don't get what people think life is about. Like I said, I didn't think I'd ever be able to live life again. And yet the example, the things that I did prepared me to live life. I mean, I've had great, I guess people would call it great success. I've had a great life after Centocor.
In his great life after Centocor, Ken went to work at the White House. After Reagan was reelected, he was recruited to work for Nancy Reagan's anti-drug campaign. Ken got his own office in the East Wing. He stopped wearing donated suits. He helped spread the gospel of just say no. He'd made it. And Centocor was about to get an even bigger boost from the Reagan administration.
To keep the program growing and the money flowing, Centocor needed people, workers, and the war on drugs would supply them.
If you don't take advantage of this, you're never going to see sunshine again for the rest of your life.
The prison to rehab pipeline. That's coming up after the break.